when you sink your first cup and it wasn't a mistake, it feels like your first good laugh of a day. If like it's almost like oddly arousing. Because you're like, I fucking did that. It's a high. It really is a high. It's like a really good high five, a really good handshake. Uh-huh. Just that, like, whew.
Hey, everybody. This has been a pretty tough week for all of us, for the country. So I'm going to forgo my normal long, wordy intro and just get right into it with this week's much needed good thing. I'll see you guys back in the booth.
Hi everybody. Okay, where are we in my time? A journalist just got sort of sawed up in a consulate in Turkey. That's what's going on right now. Things are real gross. Things are really, really bad. If you're a time traveler and you're listening to this to try to find a good time to come back in time and like save the future, if I'm talking to me from the future, how about that? If I'm talking and the person who's listening to this is a buffer version of me. I mean, I've got like a fairly broad, you know, shoulders, but I'm a little loose in the gut. And my legs, I don't have great balance. So if I'm talking to a version of me that like has all that shit going, maybe bald with a cool scar down one eye and like a broadsword and a couple of guns on his back, go back in time like 2 years before this recording date and change things. Because right now, things are maybe too shoddy to actually fix. Okay, cable version of myself, thank you. For those of you who are listening to this 2 weeks after it's recorded or whatever, shit's probably still really gross and rough. Maybe more journalists have been killed. Maybe Hurricane Michael still isn't getting FEMA support. But in a world where there's all that terrible garbage, at least there's...
beer pong, baby!
Guys, I am with a podcast legend, but somebody who podcast listeners might not know that well. I'm with one of the movers and shakers of the Los Angeles podcast scene, Sammy Junio.
Oh, go on.
Sammy is the person who makes shit happen behind the scenes. They're like the fixer of the podcast world. Sammy, for those of my listeners who don't know that much about you, so those are my listeners who like aren't Caitlin Durante.
Hey, Uncle, what's up, baby?
Will you talk about yourself?
Hi, my name is Sammy Junio. Pronouns are Sam, Sammy, they, there. I am a audio engineer and I am a technical director at a Dynasty Typewriter, a theater here in Los Angeles. I am the head of the booth and network for Ruby LA / Rubyton Radio.
Everybody in Los Angeles podcasting has either worked with them or knows them very intimately.
Very. I kiss a lot of pods.
Yeah. And it gets dirty, but it's okay with how it is.
It's consensual.
Yeah, it's consensual, and it's what makes the pod circuit work. So, Sammy, are you an optimist, pessimist, neither, both, all of the above, nothing?
I think I'm an optimist. It makes sense. I'm definitely an optimist because I know several pessimists and they're just too many for me to handle. So yeah,
really?
I'm sunshine and rainbows and puppy dogs most of the time.
That sort of surprises me.
What? How so?
Because even though you definitely project happiness, I think there's a lot of seriousness I get out of you.
Sure, but I think that there's like this ingrained hope for more from my parents and stuff.
What does that look like?
It's just like things will always, I mean, there's room for things to be, well, wait, hold on a second. Because I was trying to say there's always room for things to be better.
Right.
But that's just not, I don't, am I a pessimist?
Well, so unspool that for me. Why would that be pessimistic?
Well, it's just like, with that phrasing, it sounds like I'm just like, there's always room for things to be better in the sense that like, right now is not enough.
Hmm. So, okay, so I can see two ways of looking at that.
Sure.
One way is an optimistic way. Things are just going to keep getting better, dude, and like it's always up from here. There's always a chance to get better. And that, I think, is like classical optimism.
Right.
Like, things can get better. Because I think in that view, pessimism is like, things can't get better. This is it. This sucks. But I guess the thing that's giving you pause maybe is like, oh, but why is right now not enough?
Right.
Yeah.
But I also feel like right now is always enough because that's what you have.
Yeah. I don't think that's pessimistic.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just steered myself into a corner for a second.
Oh, this is going to be fun.
So I'm going to turn the lights off.
Yeah. What does that look like in your daily life then, optimism?
I mean, I don't think that it's like just like a very conscious thing. It's just more like, okay, well, if this isn't something that I'm enjoying or having fun, just spin it to be something that I like.
Yeah, like how?
Just like if I'm doing something that I don't enjoy, that I will do something that'll make it more enjoyable, or I'll just stop doing it.
Okay.
Is that at all any sort of linked to optimism?
I mean, that makes sense. You don't just stay where it sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, does that come out in your work? Does that come out in the way you live your life?
Yeah, I goof off constantly. Like, okay. There's, like, I'll do, like, tiny little pranks. Like, one, the other day I was, like, corresponding with somebody, and I felt like the email in that moment felt a little too stuffy.
Mm.
So I just, before I hit send, I just hit a bunch of letters and then sent it. This is like a little, I don't know, just like this wacky. I just have poor impulse control is really awesome.
Okay. So I asked about optimism v. pessimism, and you want to talk about impulse control, which is it's an optimistic way to look at poor impulse control.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. Does that come from somewhere? You briefly mentioned your parents. Would you say that was a thing you like learned from your upbringing?
It's possibly a cultural thing, but I don't want to speak generally, so just talk about my parents. Sorry, mom and dad. But there's like this deep-seated like gambling thing.
Yeah.
Of like always, because it's like.
And what culture is that? Just for
Filipino.
People? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's just like that thing of like it's ingrained in us to take what you have and like want better. And maybe that's just like an immigrant thing too.
Mm.
Just like take what you have and like try to make it more and better.
But there's an inherent risk in that.
But with like gambling specifically, there's like that like huge like risk stuff that they don't mind taking.
But it's so that to you is optimistic that you're willing to
right.
bet at all?
Be like, oh, I have all of this, and if I put it all down and I get something more out of it, then that's great.
Yeah.
But considering that I worked so hard to have that stuff, I can do it all again if I have nothing.
Huh. No, I totally follow. That isn't the way I would have looked at it with my biases and my prejudice.
Sure.
But that's a really interesting way to see that. Like, I'd rather, like, I can do it again, so what's the harm?
Yeah.
Does that come in your work life or the way that you make choices in your life?
Yeah, actually, yeah, totally. Because everything that I'm doing right now, all the podcast stuff that you mentioned, like, I just learned it on the fly. Like my first podcast job, I said yes to somebody asking me to produce their podcast that was already being produced by someone, a professional,
uh-huh.
and I had no experience whatsoever. And they're like, do you want to produce this podcast? I was like, yep, totally. And then my first podcast recording ever was live at iOS with Bob Odenkirk, Ike Barinholtz, and Beth Stelling.
Holy shit.
Yeah, the recording is terrible. But yeah, so everything that I've done up until now, I was just like, okay, yeah, I'll just do it. And I feel like if it's taken away or for some reason I decide to move, I'll just do it all again in some other field.
So you're not particularly afraid then of taking chances?
Yes, in a weird way, but also like I have a tendency to take a chance but keep my self safe, like my like creative self safe. So all that I'm doing right now, producing podcasts, recording and all that stuff, it's really just highlighting everyone else's creativity.
Right.
But it's never putting myself out there.
Is that out of fear, you think? Or?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Is. Yeah. And so what does that look like? Because I really mostly know you as a, like, as a producer, as a behind-the-scenes person.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, what does that creative self look like?
Cowered in a corner.
Okay, yeah, that's a great creativity self, I think.
But, yeah, I always have wanted to write. I mean, we talked earlier about how I wanted to be a composer, but I still haven't done any work to sharpen those skills or put it out there and stuff. Like, I have, like, notebooks and stuff full of things that I partially started, then read it and got disheartened because I think that I could do better, but I'm never taking the steps to make myself better.
There was a really nice little, like, motivational video, which I hate. I mostly hate them, but it was from Ira Glass talking about, like, the space between being a fan of something and doing the thing where you, like, you start creating it and you're like, this fucking sucks. And that's because as a fan, you develop this really good ear for, like, whatever it is, like a good taste.
Yeah.
And so you're more critical than anyone else because you're like, I love blank, right? I love music. So now I'm trying to make music and this doesn't sound like the music that I like because I like really good shit. So fuck it. And you like how long it takes to get over that hump of like, I want to make the kinds of things I like, but the kinds of things I like are so good that, yeah, you hold yourself to that standard.
Yeah, like there's like, I give myself no room for failure.
Yeah.
And I'm only looking at these end products that are, that have come from countless failures and stuff and like production and producing it to just like this perfect thing that I see. And I'm like, oh, I love that. Can I do that? I'm like, I guess not because I'm not putting in, yeah.
But as a producer and as a person who makes it happen for so many other people, do you you like, I'm sure you see that process happen.
Yeah, I do.
But it's just harder when it's you.
Yeah, there's like this thing and it's like I've always explained it as just like laziness, like, oh, I don't want to put on my thing because it's just like it's so much work and blah blah blah, but it's not so much work. I do it like 20 hours a day for everyone else. Like, give yourself half an hour and it could be out and there and you could be doing the thing. But I'm not doing the thing.
That sounds like the reverse of your other thing. That does sound like pessimism.
Yeah.
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 So it's kind of like you're balancing.
It's like the stupid duality where I'm just like telling everybody, like, yeah, you can do it. Just work hard, stick with it. Like, everything will be all right. Like, you can do it. I believe in you. You're super talented and all that stuff. And then I'm like turning around and talking to myself and being like, stop. Can't do it.
Can't do it. No.
No.
Yeah.
You're clumsy. You're a ding-a-ling. Just, like, sit down.
We all have that voice in our head, though. Like, so much. It's just so strange hearing it from a person who's made so many other people's shit, like, actually work.
I know.
Right.
It's weird.
Yeah. Because you obviously have the skills to make people's, like, boats sail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it just, my boat, like, has a giant, it doesn't have a bottom.
Well, it does. You just don't know it does. Because you have, like, the outside perspective of, like, seeing other people's boats. Like, I think everything I make is hot garbage. It's so bad. But, like, you'll be like, no, you got this. This is good. That's good. And that's because you're looking from the outside.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, what, do you remember, like, what in your life, like, propelled you to put that stuff out?
I had to, or I would have been too depressed to, like, keep working.
Okay.
I had to make a thing because everything I was doing was amounting to nothing, and I had just gotten a job, like, a day job where I sat at a desk all day and didn't get to create or, like, run around. And if I wasn't making things constantly, then, like, I probably would have just gained a bunch of weight and, like, I don't know, started wearing awful business casual and, like, gone by Alexander, you know?
Yeah.
I would have just lost myself completely.
I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that the tiny highs of helping people get their stuff out has helped me avoid that hole. And so that's why I don't feel like I need to do my stuff.
Right.
Because that happiness and completion of, like, helping somebody finish their stuff is enough.
Does that come out in non-creative parts of your life as well?
Yeah, like I am a low like a low rent adrenaline junkie. So like with beer pong, like that, yeah. The competitiveness, like that adrenaline rush, right. like a semi not sport, total high. And I dig it so much. Like me winning is great and wonderful and feels so yeah. good. But also watching my friends like kick my ass, also very good. Like yeah. there's no moment during a game that's not a high.
Wait, so you feel empathetic for your friends who are beating you?
Yeah, totally. I was playing my friend on the first game of what I was calling Beer Pongtober. and she was just like, it was like the first time we were in that sort of like friend mode, because she's one of my podcast clients.
Right.
And so she was like, oh, I'm so sorry that I'm gonna like, I don't wanna like celebrate like beating you, because this is like the first game of this yeah. thing that you were doing. And I was just like, oh no, dude, like this is fucking fantastic. Like seeing you get like pumped up, like sinking a cup
yeah.
feels so good.
Like, that's pretty radically empathetic. Yeah. Like that's hard for me to totally grasp, which is beautiful. Like that's a very empathetic thing to be able to connect to somebody even as they're beating the shit out of you.
Yeah.
To be like, yeah, I love it.
It's like, you're fucking doing it,
right.
man. Yeah, and that's like, that's part of like the high of like helping people produce and stuff. And it's like that weird like source. The source is, I'm not getting these highs myself.
Right.
So I might as well just relish in yours.
Wow. Has that always been the case for you?
Yeah, actually, this is going so weirdly somewhere where I wasn't thinking, but I tend to, when I'm interested in somebody, like
right.
like genuinely interested in somebody,
yeah.
I call this benching myself, where I'll just like wait. Like if they're sure. like if they're in a relationship or whatever, like I don't mind being like on the bench.
Oh, shit.
And I let myself be there. And there's like
yeah.
four people historically that I've done that for.
It's like tragic romantic kind of where mm-hmm. you like the pining?
Yeah.
Why?
I think it comes from just like my first experience like being in love with somebody
yeah.
was so traumatic, but I benched myself.
Because you were afraid of...
Because she was in a relationship.
Okay. But were you, like, enjoying the relationship for her? Like, enjoying her happiness at a distance, or...
No,
okay,
not at all.
All right.
No, but I think that, like, that shook any sort of, like, ego in me. Because, like, I remember being like, oh, well, I could make her way happier than he can, and blah, 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 blah,
right.
blah. But she stayed with him. So just, like... Oh, I am not that. I can't really actually put myself in that spot, because I don't really know what she needs or wants.
And you feel that way then for like, but I can support those people who know what they want.
Yeah.
That's so tragic.
Isn't it?
It is a little tragic, dude. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sweet, certainly. There's a beauty in it, but it is also pretty tragic and unfair.
Yeah. It's like all connected now that I'm like talking it out.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Oh, fuck. Oh, fuck.
Oh, no.
Cut to
at least
three
there's beer pong. There's
yeah,
beer pong.
3 hours later, there's like red thread connecting everything. And that thing that my mom said to me.
Oh, God.
When I was five.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is... It is so fascinating, the things that make people sort of do the things that you're good at lots of things, but like you right now, your life is making this shit work that makes a lot of people's lives happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fascinating to know, like, where does that come from?
Yeah.
Right? That like, this is the thing that diverted my energy to... supporting other people.
Yeah, I'm
right.
Yeah, I've like made myself supplemental.
Is there something nice about kind of losing yourself to the group?
Yeah. Definitely.
What?
There's not a lot of pressure.
Huh.
But there's still praise when you do well.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You're still recognized.
Can you go into that a little bit more?
Specifically, I don't know if I want to talk about that.
All right.
It's just like there's not a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
In just like being a part of the group, but not being the head of the group, participating in a way that like the group kind of would fall. Like it's like this weird thing where like I want to be important, but I don't want to sit at the head of the table. But
right.
But my foot's like secretly underneath a leg of the table to make it level.
No,
so
I
when
totally
I'm gone, it's
get
wobbly.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, I absolutely get that. So there's, I'm reading this book about birds right now. This is a divergence for sure, but it's this great book. Actually, the person who recommended it, not to me, but to the world, was Jack O'Brien,
okay.
Podcaster I love. He's been on the show before. And it's called The Evolution of Beauty. And it's about like how beauty evolves and that it isn't just like survival of the fittest and, you know, signaling like evolution or survival virtue. It's also like just mate preference. And so things start to, you know, spiral and get crazy. And there's these birds in Brazil, a type of like manakin is the species of bird, where the female preference has been for pro-sociality for the males. So all of the males, like the female will show up at their like display territory and there will be like five or so males and they'll do this dance where they just like leapfrog the whole line and just like show off for the woman. And then if she's into it, the like the alpha will be like, all right, boys, out of here. And the like beta males will be like, you got it, dude. And they disappear. And then the alpha gets it and like that he gets to mate. And to me, like, that isn't, there's nothing sad about that. I feel like a Jordan Peterson type of like bullshit male, you know, it's all about evolution and be like, that's the worst way it could go if we let feminism happen. But like, to me, like, no, that's the ideal in friendship. It's like, I'm yeah. here for you, dude. We're going to get you laid.
Right.
You know? And yes. then they scram.
They're yeah. wingmen. I'm sorry.
Fuck
Bye.
You. Bye. And that's been the podcast. It sounds like that's kind of the like, you want to be there for your people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, I was discussing this with somebody recently. It's just like, I feel like right now my purpose in life is to, like, make sure everybody that's close to me recognizes that they have a light in them.
Yeah.
And they should shine.
I mean, that's fucking beautiful. It's also tragic that you're doing that because no one's doing that for you.
Yeah. but they Whatever. Are. There are people yeah. that like do support me in that way.
Yeah.
Do I believe them? I don't know.
Well, that's the problem. That's always the problem.
Yeah, I've got sunglasses on.
Yeah. That you can't see the light. You've got mm-hmm. you've got inward facing sunglasses.
Yeah, I've yeah. got blinders. I got a cone on my head. I'm not gonna see that shit for a while.
Right. Yeah. It's hard, man. I feel like that's what we're all that's what a lot of creatives are working through.
Sure.
To like, well, it's either that or they're like, no, I'm the best. And you're like, no, you're not. You need to calm down.
Here's the thing, though.
Yeah.
About creatives who are putting stuff out. There isn't.
Right.
There is that ego there that's like, I'm the best. And this will change people.
Mm. Yeah, I can see that. Can you go into that a little more?
Well, just like the difference between, I'm splitting hairs, but there is that yeah. thing of like, I need to put this out so I can get to my goal, but
right.
people need to see it so I can have like constructive criticism, whatever,
right,
blah,
right,
blah,
right.
blah, blah. But there is that thing of like, I am not afraid to put this out because it's good.
I wonder if anyone actually feels that way.
I mean, they're putting their stuff out.
That's true. I mean, I don't always think what I'm putting out is good, though. I just think I need to put it out.
Why do you need to put it out? Why is it a need?
Because it was important for me to make it, and I value that I made it, and I think it matters. But it might not necessarily be good.
But it matters.
Yes.
I think that that's part. That's
okay.
the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you've told yourself, and it probably does, matter.
Right. Well, I think, and this is just my own, you know, philosophical view, but I think meaning is totally created. So I create the meaning for myself. Like, this is meaningful because it is, so I'm going to put it out. And I hope that people who do listen to this get some meaning out of it. I think, you know, people talking about what's actually good to them, I think could be potentially meaningful depending on who it is talking about it. So that's my hope. But enough about me. Let's talk about beer pong.
Yes, please.
I want to get back into sort of the like philosophical fun shit we were talking about.
Sure.
But there is a chance that people listening to this don't know what beer pong is.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I do have some listeners who listen from, like, other countries and stuff.
Okay.
And if you guys are listening from another country, India, Nicaragua, I have listeners.
Ooh,
why?
Very
I don't
good.
Know. But thank you. I don't know. Tweet at me. Why you guys listen to the show. That's fascinating. I want to know why people in, like, other countries like this shit. But what is beer pong for those people?
So beer pong is a drinking game played on a ideally kind of oblong table, much like a ping pong table.
Uh-huh.
And on each side, each of the long ends of the table, there are 6 to 10 cups filled with maybe like a third up to half of beer.
Right.
And there are opposing teams. Sometimes there's singles, sometimes there's doubles. And the goal is to get a ping pong ball in all of your opponent's cups. And you'll take, it's a turn by turn thing.
Right.
And then there are like different rules and ways to get in there. But the general thing is get your ball in the cup. And then once your opponent gets a ball into the cup on your side, then you drink that beer.
Right. So it's just a way to get drunk that's more fun than just sitting and drinking the same amount of beer.
Yep.
Yeah. How did you first start playing beer pong?
I was a townie for Colorado College, meaning I didn't go to college, but I lived near Colorado College campus. It happened by chance that a game was happening, and I was elected in, and I like there's no turning back.
What was it about the game that is like, oh, this is what I love?
Oh, it's just like, it's that thing of like, you can get it in by luck, or you can also like train your body and memorize your movements and like just like slightly adjust and like.
Oh, right, because you're an athlete, right?
I am a semi-athlete. I come from like an athletic family, and I have like those like muscle. Yeah.
Yeah, but you were when you were growing up, I think.
Yes.
You used to fence, right?
Yes, I did. Yeah. And so like, it's just like the process, and like you can kind of like zen out a little bit, and there's like that like low level, for me, high level of competition, and then there's like that social aspect of like when you have a teammate and you don't know them. You're still high-fiving, you're getting excited with each other, and you build off with each other. You can, like fake trash talk the other team. Like, it just fills me with such joy and beer. It's so dumb. Like, any drinking game like that, I love it so much.
Is it that it's a way to, like, it takes a party, which is kind of a diffuse thing, and, like, concentrates it?
Yeah.
So now everybody's kind of focused around this one thing. You're doing a thing.
Yeah.
That comes up a lot on this podcast. People's good things are oftentimes things that take sort of a diffuse conglomerate of people and like turn it into a group. Like board games was that, wrestling was that.
Yeah.
Or like we're a bunch of strangers, but now we are focused in on this thing, and we're all part of this shit.
Yeah, we're bound together by the one game that we play, because it could be easily like switched out, and then you have another. Yeah, it's just like, it's connection.
Okay, and that's super important, especially at like a party where you don't know people.
Yeah.
I'm not a big party person. I don't really like that, because it just doesn't work with, like, it's a lot of noise, and I prefer like quiet or running around outside in nature. But having a thing where it's like, oh, you're not at a party, you're doing X, is so nice.
Very cool. Yeah, it takes the anxiety out of everything, because you're just forced into a situation and you're like, okay, have fun.
This is what we do. Yeah, this is what we're doing. And getting lost in an action, in a motion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's repetitive.
And it's sort of like timeless, you know, because it takes you out of the thing you're doing. Yeah, I totally get that. So do you come back to it a lot now? Like, are you always looking for a chance to do that?
Yeah, I have a professional-grade beer pong table.
Okay, yeah, that is embarrassing. They're covering their face in, like, this very ashamed way.
Before I had the table, like, I was playing it on whatever. But, yeah, I got it off of Facebook Classifieds. This girl was trying to sell her boyfriend's beer pong table before like he got home and noticed. But like he also wasn't using it, so it wasn't like a big old scam. But so I bought the table, and whenever I'm invited to a party or there's like I want to throw a party, I'm like, beer pong. It's beer pong or bowling that I'll suggest always.
Just because it's like a thing.
Yeah, it's like it's a repetitive thing. There's high fives around. There's like everybody just like kind of focuses in, like even if they're not playing, it is like a spectator sport too.
Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna do a little connecty thing.
Yeah.
Do
it.
A little connection.
Do it.
You're trying to bring a thing that brings everybody together at the party, even if you're losing. That is very similar to all the shit we've just talked about.
Possibly.
Yeah.
But this, for like, for beer pong, like, I don't mind striving.
Okay.
I really love winning.
Well, yeah, I guess there isn't much to be embarrassed about if you win at beer pong. The rules are simple. Yes. That's it. It's the rules. I had someone on talking about board games. Were you my, not editor.
What's engineer. The word?
Were you my engineer for that episode?
I don't think so.
Okay. So I had this guy, Tom Ryman, on. He's a writer, comedian, really interesting dude. We were talking about board games. Actually, weirdly enough, one of the only people who's ever come on this podcast and said he was an outright pessimist.
Oh.
Which I love. Most people say they're either optimists or like some, they try to avoid saying they're realists because it sounds douchey, or I've had a couple people say they're nihilists. But he was like, no, I'm a pessimist. I think everything's going down to the worst. It'll always be worse. Oh, no. Him and my friend Matt Grossinger, those two people said they're pessimists. Hmm. But he was talking about board games and how like, yes, it focuses everything in, but it also like fights off the chaos of the world because you know what the rules are. You know what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Right? And with something like beer pong, parties are chaotic.
Sure.
Like a beer pong table, like, no, this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
We're all, this is how we're going to drink. This is how we're going to play. Like, this is it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. So that's, it makes sense. It sounds like, like with producing your own shit, like what we were talking about, that sounds pretty chaotic. Yeah. Helping other people doesn't sound all that chaotic.
Right. Yeah, there's a process to it. There's
exactly.
A beginning, middle, and boom.
But with beer pong, right, with a party, it's the same. It's like, what the fuck are we doing, right? Do we have to talk to strangers?
Right.
Like, what's there? But with a game to play, it's like, this is it. This is what we do.
That's so funny. Because I've always thought, like, I, like, strive in chaos. I think I do.
You mitigate chaos. You strive in chaos by mitigating chaos.
Sure, okay.
Right, that's the shit you do as a producer. So with beer pong, mm-hmm. like, have you met a lot of friends through it?
No, I've just strengthened friendships that already exist. But also, there are people that, like, really surprise me.
Really?
That are good or, like, interested in playing. Because it's like, my friend group out here, I'm sorry if anyone's offended. You know, it's fine. They're, like, mild-mannered people. I am just a tornado of energy.
Right.
All the time, which is, yeah.
Tornado of nails and teeth.
Yeah. Just,
Yeah.
So to see who, like, has an interest in the game and who's good at the game, like, it just, it's surprising, and I love being surprised by people.
Yeah.
Like, positively surprised by people.
Right.
So, yeah, it's like, strengthened, like, past guest of this podcast, Caitlin Durante. She's also, like, super competitive and is also, like, really, like, will stick through it. So, like, every time we play beer pong, we end up playing, like, 7 games.
That's a lot of beer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, we'll like, put a little bit in it.
Okay.
Or, like, I've shifted into putting water in the cups, but, like, we're drinking beer.
Oh, okay.
So that slows it down, too.
Yeah.
So it's not, like, a super crazy rowdy.
Right.
Sometimes.
when it's time to turn up, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. When I'll turn up.
Yeah. That's really fascinating to me. But it makes sense. It makes sense with what we're talking about, that, like, this is a way to sort of control the party chaos.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing. It's a necessary thing if you want to hang out with a bunch of people, having, like, a thing to do.
Yeah. And I also, like, really hate small talk, too.
God, don't I just. It's terrible.
It's so bad.
Right.
But, like, it's so bad for me to the point where, like, I don't really like answering, how was your day?
Yeah.
Because I'm just like, no, you don't care. And I'm not going to talk you through it. You weren't there, so
right.
You don't get to know.
Yeah. Well, even if something really cool happened?
If something cool happens and it sticks with me, like, the memory of it sticks with me to the point where I want to tell somebody else,
mm-hmm.
great.
Okay.
Otherwise, if you're not there.
Huh. That's interesting to me. Makes sense with what we've just discovered about you, that, like, sure. You're not really that interested in telling people about you.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you are interested in hanging out with them and making sure they have a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Oh. Whoa.
Whoa! Ah!
So had you never discovered beer pong, do you think the way you interact with people, like, okay, let me back up. It sounds like you came upon it at a pretty... What's the word I'm looking for? Like an interesting time in your life. You're pretty young. You weren't in college, but you were around people in college.
Yeah, but I was college aged.
Okay, so you're college aged, around other people, college age. Like, that's an interesting time. That's like a big shift in your life.
Sure.
where were you before? Where were you like after? Like, were you needing a change and like to interact with new people really badly and you needed something to help you do that?
No, I think it was, I think beer pong is just like a bonus, like way to talk to people. Cause I am pretty social at parties. Like I really strive in a social situation, but if it wasn't beer pong, and if I didn't discover it, it would be oddly like on the dance floor.
Really? Are you a big dancer?
Yeah. I mean, I like it. And there's that thing of like when you can like find a connection with somebody.
I've always found like, that so hard on the dance floor.
Really?
I love to dance in the right scene, but like connecting to somebody on a dance floor.
Oh, sure.
It's like, so what do we do now? Do we talk? Do we kiss? Like, what is this? Okay, well, bye.
Well, because like I don't like to like couples dance, but it's just like it's definitely like a dance battle type situation, right. That's like that's the fun thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's something like connection, but a little competitive.
Yep.
Yeah. So you didn't really need it so much in your life, but then why was it your good thing? Because you clearly love it more than just like being at parties. Like you didn't choose being at parties as your topic.
Right.
You chose beer pong.
Yeah.
So if it wasn't a thing that like I needed this to be who I am today, is it that it lets you be somebody who you aren't today? It lets you be somebody maybe better or
no? I think it does. It has to do with the like the tiny highs of winning / losing.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like the adrenaline rush within the adrenaline rush. So a social situation with like lots of people. Like you get pumped up a little bit. You're like kind of a hopefully a brighter version of yourself. And then within that, there's the game, which like then you can like kind of like be a little bit more aggressive and be someone who you're like not always. But also, they're in you.
So it's kind of like a play, a little bit. You're like getting to be someone who isn't you, who is you, but like a different version of yourself. It's like wearing a mask a little bit.
Yeah, a little. Just like with any sport, though. Like you're not,
Yeah.
Any other sport.
Like any, beer pong, just like any other sport.
It's an Olympic sport. How dare you?
No, it is. Like I saw, I want to go to the Olympics in LA so I can see judo and beer pong.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
this is a big summer.
Big summer Olympic Games. But it does sound like you are, there's a freedom in wearing a mask.
A little bit,
you're more yourself while being not yourself.
Right.
And it sounds like this is, in a way, the mask is we are playing beer pong, right? Because it's like, it's just, you're just throwing balls and cups and drinking a beer.
Yeah.
Right? Like you could do those elements and it not be beer pong and it wouldn't have the same effect. Right, like if you were just drinking or just throwing balls in cups, right, or whatever, nothing would change.
I don't know about
You don't
that.
Think that?
No. Because I think it's just like that, like, well, it's probably because I'm having trouble because it's like these are elements of beer pong, so they're going to make me happy just like beer pong. But also,
Yeah.
No, you're right, though, a little bit. Because, I don't get, like, real bro-y when I'm just drinking. Well, I do, but not less high fives.
It's less high fives. It's all, there's no, like, game to drinking. Drinking is a thing you do, but it's not, like, an activity. Unless you're, I don't know, unless you're, like, in high school.
There is a game of, like, socializing.
Sure.
I feel like I'm always just playing games.
Huh.
And, like, beer pong is, like, an actual game.
Right, it's the ultimate. It lets you not have to feel weird about playing the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Have you ever heard of James P. Carse? Mm-mm. Everybody's referencing him right now. He's just getting referenced all over the place. He's, I guess, a philosopher, like a non-believing theologian, but he wrote this book that I really like. I don't like everything the dude says. And he also is the type of guy who writes in a way where you're like, everything he says is true, just because he writes in that sort of like, where you're like, yeah. And then when you look back, you're like, let me think about that. But this book that I do really love of his is called Finite and Infinite Games. And it's about like the two types of games. There's games like life where you just want to keep shit going. And like the only goal of the game is to keep the game going. And that's like socializing, living, being friends with people, or even like some, you know, some more loose things like playing in like the podcast community, right? We're trying to like keep it going. So everyone's being creative and creating new things. That's like a infinite game. But then there are like finite games that have bounded rules and specific like beginnings, endings, and if you change those, you lose the game because the game is to play within those.
Huh.
And those, like, those let you explore the infinite game in a different way, right? Because through playing this finite game, you can, like, sort of change how you're playing the infinite game a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
It sounds kind of like beer pong gives you the chance to take this infinitely mutable thing of, like, socializing parties, like, what are we doing? What's the end goal? And, like, focus it into this is what it is.
Huh.
Which lets you be the sort of you you're a little afraid of being in the infinitude, right? Where you're, like, repping your own shit and making your own shit, you know?
Oh, whoa, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
Having that finitude. Now I'm just saying SAT words. Is that how you pronounce it? Finitude? Whatever. Finality lets you do the shit, like, promote your own shit, have those little highs.
Yeah.
More.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Whoa. Whoa. That's our third whoa break.
Yeah, we're really referencing Keanu a lot here, which makes me happy.
I love him so much.
Good.
What a good dude.
All the good people in the world like Keanu Reeves.
Keanu is just a gem.
Yeah.
Of a human.
I love that man.
Oh, God.
God, I want to interview him so bad. Keanu,
you'd be down,
if you're listening, can I get you on the podcast?
Yeah, Keanu, hit me up, bud.
Yeah.
I miss you.
You know Keanu?
No.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, I do.
I would believe it. Yeah. Let's talk about things in a broader sense.
Let's do it.
Okay. Beer pong, right? Mm-hmm. You know my big little G good thing. It's just a scaffold. It's not anything real. It's just shit I make up.
Sure.
But so little G good we just talked about a lot, which I love. Because a lot of times, like, when I'm talking to people about their thing, we tend to sort of blow past, like, why it's good for them in such a deep way,
mm-hmm.
and get to, like, why it's big, like, why a world, like, why is the sun so fucking good? Because it's the fucking sun, right? We tend to go there, I think, really fast, and I love that. But it's awesome that we just hit on why it's so, like, personally good.
Mm-hmm.
Why is a world that has beer pong in it a better world? And I refuse to believe that there isn't an answer to this.
Oh, boy. Why? I don't. I mean, it's just got to be, it's not the same game to everyone that it is to me. So why is a world with beer pong so good?
Yeah.
I think it serves as an icebreaker. It makes people be a little bit more social.
Okay.
And it does create the opportunity for people to surprise one another. It's a good icebreaker.
Mm-hmm. And that's good because knowing more people means, like, having a fuller life, or, like, what does that better icebreaker, you think?
Yeah, I think it's, like, you're interacting with people not deeper than small talk. And it's a shared experience.
That makes sense to
there
me.
There you go.
Shared experience.
Yeah.
You might not necessarily be talking to them about ideas, but sharing an experience with somebody is so, really does change you.
It does, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, literally.
There are people who I have maybe said all of five words to, but I've, like, shared cool experiences with that I'm always happy to see.
Yeah.
And even, like, I feel sometimes even more, like, open in myself around those people than I do around people who I've, like, said a lot to.
Right, well, because they don't have all those things to, like, hold you to that you've said, and they're, like, weirdly remember. They're like, what? Okay.
Oh, right. I did say that I wanted to go there on Tuesday. Shit, sorry.
You know what? People change.
Yeah. But you know what doesn't change?
Beer pong.
Us when we're playing beer pong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Us with that mask on. It does sound kind of like it's one of those activities that lets you be in the right frame, like, a little bit more yourself while being a little bit less of the person you have to be on the street.
Right, yeah, it is freeing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit more about that feeling?
It's just, I think it's, give me a second. Well, because it's like, outside of playing the game or playing any game, I am, like, a more chill, like, level person.
Right.
And that is still me.
Mm-hmm.
But there's that feel, it's, like, kind of just, like, all the energy that I want to express, like, kind of just goes into a little pocket, and then it all comes out when I'm allowed to be competitive in a light kind of way.
Yeah, right. It's a free, safe space.
Yeah,
to do that, I totally understand.
Like, out of control on the playground.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I guess you feel a lot like you don't get to be out of control.
Yeah, because it's just like, I mean, I'm a high fiver, like, and I get pumped and excited, and I'm not necessarily saying that, like, in my everyday life I'm just like real low level, low energy, like, right, won't get excited, because I will, because I do, like, walk around with, like, puppy dog eyes, and I'm, like, stoked at, like,
they do, yeah,
when the sun hits my face right, and I'll just, like, stare up in the sky for a second, yeah, like, everything is great, and, like, but there's just some, that, like, extra notch of, like, freedom in a, and maybe it's just, like, the sports thing,
right,
because it's been in my life, in my family for a while, it's just, like, having that, like, weird aggressive, like, I'm allowed to be aggressive.
Do you feel like you have to, like, cage the aggression a lot? Yeah. Why?
Because it's just intense, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm an intense person, clearly. But,
right.
That's not negatively intense or aggressive, but just, like, I'm just intense.
I don't think aggression is a negative. I think it often gets used in very negative ways.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. But aggression can even be, like, friendly. It can be lovable,
you
know, at the right times.
At the right times.
Right, at the right times, at the right place. Yeah. So it sounds like freedom to be your full self is kind of the biggest thing this is all about, right? Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair.
Because it sort of seems like you're looking for little ways in which you can, like, kind of pull that. I know I've used mask in two ways now.
No,
I use mask to be, like, freeing, and also, like, mask in the, like, dumb, like, you were all wearing masks, man. But, like, it's sort of both. Like, you can wear the mask to take the mask off. God damn it.
You did it.
I did it. But it sounds like anything that lets you kind of focus in lets you, you're wearing the mask of beer pong to be aggressive, to, like, let some of that energy that is you out in a safe way where you, maybe the world doesn't feel weird, or maybe it's just you. Maybe you, because of whatever reason, don't feel like you can be that.
Yeah.
And this lets you feel like you can be that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
I think that's the case for a lot of people with a lot of things.
I think so too.
Yeah. And it's nice to have something like that at a party where, like, you know, you don't want someone super aggressive at a party who's just aggressive.
Right.
That's scary. Nobody wants to be around that person.
Right.
Yeah. No. We've all been around that person.
Yeah. I was that person for a while.
Were you?
Yeah. I was an angry person.
Yeah?
Yeah. Angry kid.
Just because of, like, how you grew up? Or?
Well, I suppressed everything. I think what you were touching on, I was just like, oh, yeah, like, I, for a long time, like, didn't express myself at all.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you think that's because of your, like, upbringing?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Totally.
Yeah. Is there anything you feel comfortable talking about with that?
It was just bottling things up.
Yeah.
And, like, knowing that if I expressed myself in the angry way I wanted to, I would look like somebody I didn't want to be.
Yeah.
And so, and there was also, like, a lot of fear too when I was younger.
Yeah.
So being fearful and angry and not expressing it kind of like put me in a weird, like, box.
Right. I feel like that's such a human experience and something that people our age are still, like, so working through. I get that, man. I'm sorry.
No,
that
it's
sucks.
Totally fine. Like, but, like, I mean, you have, like, when you're in that box, like, you have to go through something that breaks you, but also breaks the box.
Did that happen?
Yeah, I'm on the other side of it.
Yeah. Are you comfortable talking about that?
It was just a really, it was a really weird, like, relationship.
Yeah.
That, like, broke everything about me down, everything good, but also everything bad. And then it was just like being able to reflect on who I was and seeing all the stuff that I didn't like and rebuilding it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's intense.
Yeah.
How did that happen? Are you comfortable talking about how that happened?
Yeah, it was just, it's just like this weird thing of like, it was just with a person who kind of reminded me of myself, and as far as like they didn't express stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it was that, and just like the nature of the relationship was just ridiculous. I think that like I'm a very like romantic, like physical person, mm-hmm. with consent, but but they weren't.
Yeah.
And so that also like just like broke me down, like, because there was like zero needs met. Mm. And it was a long, long time.
Yeah.
That we were like together.
And was this like the first relationship you were ever in, or something?
No,
like that?
This one was like 4 years ago.
Okay.
5 years ago.
Yeah.
Four. Yeah. And so it was just like I saw just all of myself just like fade away.
Woof.
Yeah. But in a weird way, like all of the bad stuff faded away too, and I was able to just be like, okay, well, that wasn't cool part of me, like, let's fix that, let's be a little bit more communicative, let's do this and that, like, so.
Right. Fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You gotta be broken to fix it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm happy that you came out the other side.
Thank you. I'm way cooler now.
And it was beer pong that saw you through the whole way.
Yeah, seriously, yeah.
I mean, that doesn't have to
no,
be true.
No, but it was definitely, yeah, no, it was just, yeah, whatevs.
It, yeah, I mean, I know it's a little corny to try to make everything tie up in a bow, but it does feel sort of like the through line for this has been freedom and restraint,
mm-hmm.
and beer pong is kind of a place where you can be free.
Yeah.
Right? Like, uh-huh. in a safe way. So there's still a little bit of restraint there, but it's like the restraint that lets you kind of let loose, let it free.
Yeah.
Okay, I have one last question. I asked this to John Gabris about his thing. He was talking about the beach, and I liked his response. So if this is cool, it's not. If not, we'll cut it out.
But sure.
Like, do you have kind of like a sense memory, or like what it's like to be playing beer pong? Like, what does that feel like, look like to you?
Oh, it feels when you sink your first cup and it wasn't a mistake, it feels like your first good laugh of a day. Like, it's almost like oddly arousing. Because you're like, I fucking did that. It's a high. It really is a high. It's like a really good high five, a really good handshake, uh-huh. just that, like, whew.
Yeah.
Like, almost goosebumps.
Yeah.
And it's, and then, yeah, it's that.
Wow. Okay. Well, fuck. let's all, like, sort of, let's get the blood out of our faces. And then, do you have any pluggables you want to plug?
Yeah, watch Historical Roast on Netflix.
Will you talk about spring? Historical Roast really quick?
Historical Roast is a live comedy show that I produced with Eddie Firth and Ryan Pigg. We recently sold it to Netflix. And so, actually, this comes out in 2 weeks?
This will come out in 2-3 weeks, yeah.
Okay, well, if you're local to Los Angeles, we are filming Monday, Wednesday, and Friday starting October 29th. So we need people out to come and watch like on every one of those days. So if you come out, please do. Please do come watch that. But yeah, so Historical Roast on Netflix will be in the spring. Historical Roast is a monthly show over at the Comedy Store in the Belly Room. We're also over at Dynasty Typewriter. Fictional Roast is our sister show to that. And that's at the Comedy Store at the Belly Room and Dynasty Typewriter. I am also hopefully releasing my own video podcast, Non-Binary Code, by the end of this month, which is also my 30th birthday.
Ooh, mazel. Yeah, I'll promote that on the Twitter feed too.
Thank you.
Do you have anybody's work who you are in no way connected to that you also want to plug?
Ooh, let's see. No way connected? Okay.
Yeah, no way. You haven't worked on it at all. Maybe you can know them or something. It's just like not your project.
Oh, watch Gilmore Girls.
Okay. Yeah, guys, watch Gilmore Girls. Easy enough. For me, what's up? If you guys are... Actually, let me plug something else. If you listen to the Gabrus episode, I'm going to plug the same shit he plugged that wasn't related to him. See the movie Mandy, the Nick Cage movie Mandy.
Really?
It is the fucking heaviest, most metal thing I've ever seen. It's so awesome. I saw it with my friend Diogo. From the first shot of that movie, I knew it was going to be relentless. I like had to fight myself not to be grabbing onto his coat the whole time. It is like an awesome old like Conan the Barbarian movie, but it's set in the 80s, and it's just, there's so much drugs and insanity, and it's like Nick Cage's Matrix, where like the Matrix is the ideal movie for Keanu Reeves, where like everything he's good at, it let him do it, and it made it so it's not like laughable or weird. It's like, yes, Keanu was the right role for this. Every weird like yelling and weird emotion and weird face that Nick Cage has ever done, it fits in this movie so fucking well. You're like, no one could have made this but Nicolas Cage.
Wow.
Some people don't like it. Some people think it's just kind of like a Nicolas riding Refn, you know, unnecessarily ultra-violent movie, and I totally get that. But I've seen that dude's movies like Drive and, you know, Only God Forgives, and like, they're fine. I like them, but I don't love them. But like, this movie fucking bangs. Go see Mandy. See it in theaters if you can. If you like drugs, get a little high before you see it. Oh God, it's so good. And for me, if you guys are waiting on your friend who just showed up at the party to pour, you know, like a third of beer into each of the 6 or 10 solo cups so you can finally start playing beer pong, maybe chat with that person you think's kind of cute, but you're a little nervous to talk to them. While you're waiting, if you don't want to seem weird, pull out your phone, pretend you're going on Instagram like all the cool kids. Instead, pull up the Apple, iTunes, podcast, whatever page, find At Least There's This, give me 5 stars, and then start playing. Please share this with a friend. If you know that they like this or any other episode, it helps. This podcast is entirely spread through word of mouth, and literally any share helps. Thank you for listening. I love you guys. Bye.